Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader. He's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Senator.
Today we're talking about an article that you wrote that appeared in the Reader on February 16th, 2017, titled Going for Broke. Online it's called How the Trump Administration Could Bankrupt Chicago Public Schools. And I thought we'd start out with sort of my perspective of the Chicago Public Schools funding landscape.
Okay, please share.
Since 1995, the Chicago Public Schools organization has deferred its obligations, its legal obligations, to pay into the teachers' pension fund. And that's resulted in billions of dollars of debt into which it now must pay hundreds of millions of dollars annually.
Yeah.
Its regular revenue stream relies pretty much on property taxes, Cook County property taxes. And while other school districts with higher property taxes can put more money into their schools because they have more property taxes, there's evidence that Chicago schools need the money more because impoverished children have greater educational needs. They're harder to teach and therefore more expensive to school.
Right.
This perspective that I'm painting here says that without new sources of revenue, we can't expect Chicago Public Schools to pay its debt obligations and at the same time sufficiently fund classrooms. Would you say that's a fair perspective?
Mm-hmm.
Anything to add?
I think you summed it all up.
Thanks for listening.
I think you pretty much summed it all up, young man. Our leaders are leading us toward bankruptcy. There's no other conclusion I can come up with. They seem determined to bankrupt Chicago Public Schools, particularly Governor Rauner seems determined to bankrupt Chicago Public Schools because he's not adequately providing a funding source for the schools to remain solvent. So they're going to go bankrupt. If you cut the property taxes or freeze them the way he proposes and don't grant more money in state aid to compensate, then they're going to go belly up.
And for those of you who have not been paying attention to the current budget negotiation drama here in year three without a state budget, the current plan espoused by the Illinois State Senate includes, apparently, a two-year property tax freeze statewide.
Yeah.
And the governor recently, in his, quote, budget, unquote, address, said that he would like it if that bill passed with a permanent property tax freeze. So it's interesting. You mentioned this in your story. Does that seem like a cynical ploy? Because
yes, I called it cynical. One of the most cynical ploys of all time. Yes.
If you freeze property taxes, and then if you don't create another revenue stream, you're essentially not only crippling schools, like ones in Chicago that rely so heavily and, as I said, need it so badly, but any other municipal revenue needs become strangled.
Yeah, it's very cynical. To give him the best spin possible, he's subscribing to the notion that people are overtaxed. So if he is going to endorse a hike in the state income tax to pay for education, then he will also endorse a freeze of the property tax. We already have gone through a freeze of property tax or a cap on property taxes. Anyway, it's always popular to endorse a property tax cut or freeze or a cap because most people don't like paying property tax. Most people don't like paying taxes. I put myself on that list as well, but I realize that if society and civilization is to function, we need to fund it. And we need to adequately fund it. We need to fairly tax people in order to fund it. And Governor Rauner's going in the other direction. But when you look at his full package of his proposals, each one contradicts the other one. So for instance, he won't sign on to a bill that would send $200+ million to Chicago to pay for its pension obligations that you just alluded to, unless the city agrees to reform its pension plans. Well, reform in his context means cut. Well, the Supreme Court of Illinois has on two occasions said you can't cut it. So he's asking for Chicago to do something that they can't do by law. So it's absurd ultimatum he's giving the city. It's like he's demanding, I'm not going to give you your money until you do something that you can't do. Then you're really just saying you're not going to give them their money. And that's why I say I think the only conclusion one can reach is that he wants Chicago to go bankrupt.
Let's talk about this particular drama in the budget landscape. Let's go back to the beginning. The Chicago Board of Education passed its 2017 budget that assumed that it had received this $215 million that you just talked about from the state, which it would then use towards a pension fund payment.
Mm-hmm.
And the General Assembly passed such a bill last November,
yeah,
only to have, as you said, Governor Bruce Rauner veto it in December. Rauner said that the legislature didn't fulfill an agreement for pension reform. There's been so much back and forth on this between members of the General Assembly and the governor's office. I looked back to see, well, where
there
exactly
no
this agreement?
Yeah.
Well, the only place I could find it was in a statement made by state Republican leader Christine Redonio in July. Quote, "I am very pleased to say that one piece of what we passed today was a commitment to address pension reform in exchange for assistance to the city of Chicago with their pension problems," unquote. And what she was talking about was the stopgap budget that the General Assembly passed in June. So I looked through the state legislature's bill history stuff, and there was, in fact, nothing in the stopgap budget law giving the $215 million to Chicago for the teachers' pension fund. What did happen, though, was a Senate bill called 2822 passed the House on June 30th of last year, and it sat until November 7th when the Senate passed it, and that was the bill that Rauner vetoed. Apparently, the legislature didn't learn a lesson from the Blagojevich years, where it was widely reported that Speaker Madigan would not take any oral commitments from Governor Blagojevich. He insisted that whenever an agreement was made, it was in writing. Well, apparently, yeah, this commitment wasn't made in writing, is the way I'm getting it. So later, it enabled the Democrats to say, what agreement?
Yeah.
So what do you think about all this?
Well, I think that you could lose your mind trying to keep track of all the maneuverings that go on, machinations that are happening in Springfield, and it seems to change from day to day. There has been no effective agreements between the Democrats and Rauner, because while he may have a momentarily, or look like they may have like a working proposal with the Senate President Cullerton, who's a Democrat, he doesn't have agreement with House Speaker Madigan, who's also a Democrat. You need both houses to sign on. So it's all posturing. While this posturing is happening, Rauner is financing a Republican Party onslaught against Madigan, maligning Madigan for being responsible for all the ills that Illinois faces. And then any Democrat who steps up in any way to oppose Rauner on anything gets maligned as Madigan's puppet. So Rahm Emanuel has been hit that way. Amaya Pawar, who's running for
governor,
has been, Chris Kennedy, when he announced, J.B. Pritzker, who hasn't even announced he's running for governor, but thought about it or is thinking about it, was already hit on a routine basis. The state reps are hit with these press releases. So it's like there is no effort to have a compromise. It's like a political battle. It's been ongoing since Rauner got elected.
It's a never-ending campaign.
Yeah, it's a never-ending campaign. So again, you talk about cynicism. To pluck from nowhere a non-existent agreement and proclaim that there is an agreement and then accuse the Democrats of violating an agreement that never was actually reached is almost as cynical as demanding that the city of Chicago abide by pension reforms that the state Supreme Court has already ruled twice they can't make. That's why I've come to the conclusion that Bruce Rauner wants Chicago's public schools to go bankrupt. Either that or he's insane. So take your choice. Although one could say by wanting them to go bankrupt, he's insane. So really no difference.
There's a certain teachers union official who calls him a sociopath.
Yes. The great Karen Lewis says that. So to this, Stu, I added Trump in this column that we're talking about because he's threatening to dilute the amount of federal funds that cities like Chicago get by siphoning them off to more private lens schools or voucher programs. Lord knows what he has in mind. He hasn't really stipulated it specifically. So there could be a further reduction in public funding. And that's why it's a very serious moment for public schools throughout the country, but particularly Chicago, because unlike, let's say, New Trier, where Rauner lives, they have currently the ability to tax their way out of this through property taxes.
Because their property taxes are so high.
Their property taxes are so high, and their obligations, their other property tax obligations are relatively low. They don't have a TIF program, for instance. So, they don't squander money on stupid things. So we're really under the gun. I don't see any way out right now other than defeating Rauner in 2018. I don't even know if that will enable us to solve our problems, because I don't know if Rauner is defeated, who will replace him, and you know what positions the new governor would have. But I don't see any other way out of pending bankruptcy.
We have a couple of billionaires on deck, so no problem there. Check that one. Let's go back, just go into the weeds here a little bit about this $215 million. As I said earlier, the Chicago Public Schools Administration decided, even though that $215 million was not yet passed by the state legislature, they stuck it. The CPS stuck it in its budget.
Yeah.
And Karen Lewis, the president of the Chicago Teachers Union, appeared on WGN Radio recently, and I thought we'd listen to what she had to say about that.
I said, why are you baking this $215 million into your budget when you know you're not going to get it? Because the governor has already said he wants these unconstitutional turnaround agenda points done with other people's pensions. Why are you tying our budget to other people's pension when you knew he was never going to sign that? I would have never turned that into that. So what did they do? They took away our professional development days only because they didn't want to make parents mad, because those are days kids don't come to school anyway. But those days are extraordinarily important to our members for planning, for doing things that help kids ultimately. And I've heard people say, well, we want the money in the classroom. And what they're really saying is, we want the money in the toys. We don't want the money in the people that are actually going to be manipulating those toys. We want the money in the toys. We want to make sure the computers or their whiteboards or whatever, smart boards, whatever you want and need. But the key is, we have constantly underfunded our schools, under-resourced them, starved them. We have an epidemic of violence in this city, and we cannot get social workers and clinicians in those classrooms.
She says a few things here, but one of the things I want to key in on is that Lewis accuses CPS of essentially being disingenuous around putting this $215 million of revenue in the budget.
Yes, they are disingenuous.
And she says that one of the ways they plugged it is they took 4 professional development days that CPS had just negotiated with the teachers union in its recent contract, and they nixed it just because they were supposed to be paid days. They went to unpaid days, and CPS said, well, you know, kids weren't going to be in the classroom anyway.
So, she's absolutely correct. They don't have the resources for the additional staff that are so important to, like, the overall condition of a child in a school, particularly like you were alluding to earlier, a low-income child, you know, comes from a high-crime area. And social workers, counselors, you know, that kind of thing. Again, this just accentuates the advantages that wealthier kids have. They have far more contact with these sorts of assistants, you know, clinicians, whatever you want to call them. You're struggling, there's a counselor, you need tutorials, there's a tutor. If the school system doesn't provide it, your parents can pay for it out of pocket. There's all kinds of advantages that are just obviously built into the system that favor the wealthy. And what our government tries, is supposed to do, or is dedicated to the notion of sort of evening things out. And we're heading in towards sort of like a very Hobbesian concept of civilization where you just fend for yourself.
And here you're not talking about Calvin and Hobbes.
No. I'm talking, Thomas, the great philosopher. So I try to make humor of it a lot, but sometimes it's just too painful to even joke about. We have been very cynical how we funded education going back as long as I can recall being in Chicago, but definitely since 1995, when they took money that was earmarked for teacher pensions and essentially made it discretionary money for the mayor to spend at whatever way he wanted it, and they held it as reform. If you go back and read the articles from 1995, 96, 97, all the usual suspects, from our downtown civic community to our editorial boards to, you know, the politicians, our elected officials, patted each other on the back for saying, we've reformed spending, and our wise, benevolent mayor Daley in those days, soon to be replaced by another wise, benevolent mayor, Emanuel, is doing the right thing with our resources. And of course, here we are 20 years later, we're on the verge of bankruptcy.
Reform has taken on different meanings over the years. And in that case, you're talking about reform being a euphemism for not spending money on pension obligations.
Yeah. Reform is one of the most meaningless words in Illinois and Chicago politics. I don't think anyone should use it. It's used all the time. It's so cynical. You talk about cynical. Everything is a reform. If you want to change something, you call it a reform. And essentially what reform has meant in terms of Chicago is giving more power to the mayor. And neither mayor that we've had over the last 30 years has shown any indication that he could use that power judiciously. And so it's essentially a way of wasting money and squandering money. And at some point, like, there's an inner Tea Party guy in me that breaks out in an eruptions about how cynical everybody is. So I can understand the frustration of the Tea Party people who are sick and tired of seeing their taxes go the way they do. The difference between me and them, obviously, is that I still believe in this like social contract, this construct that government helps people. It is really dispiriting to watch year after year our Democratic elected officials in the city of Chicago so miserably mismanaging it, and then to watch, on the other hand, extremists from the Republican side, Trump, Rauner, everybody adheres to them, cynically calling for reforms that are just mean bankruptcy.
So we have mismanagement, what you call mismanagement, on the one side by the Democrats,
yeah,
and this trumpeting, pardon the word, for reform,
yeah,
on the part of the Republicans. So it makes me very curious, like, what was going on in the Democrats' minds, in the state Democrats' minds, when this so-called agreement was struck last summer, where allegedly the Rauner administration and the legislative leaders agreed that there will be some reform enacted in trade for getting this $215 million for Chicago teacher pension payments. And it wasn't in writing. And like we just said, given the fact that the word reform means different things to different people, you would think that someone in the Democratic side said, well, you know, if we don't agree like what this is, then we're never going to be able to agree on it. And I just want to say further that in your column, and you said it a moment ago, in this context, you refer to reform as cuts.
Yeah.
The most recent sort of iteration of reform with respect to this particular aspect of school funding, namely the Chicago teachers' pension obligations, there is a compromise that is ascribed to State Senator President John Cullerton, which is as follows. It lets government workers choose between annual cost of living adjustments during their employment,
mm-hmm,
or counting pay raises when their pensions are calculated,
right,
after they retire.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be technical about it, that sort of, quote, reform, unquote, is not technically cutting present pay. It is limiting growth of future pay.
Okay.
So to be not technically a cut.
And that's the argument they're going to put forth when it's sued, when the lawsuit is filed to challenge it. So we'll see if it survives a court challenge.
So that is the sort of the compromise that many feel would survive,
yes,
a court challenge.
Yes. As we've already been down this road twice before, when Pat Quinn, former Governor Pat Quinn, proposed cuts that would save the system. That's how they presented it to us. And then how many, I forget, was it over a year of litigation that followed before?
At least.
Okay. And so now we're a year behind,
mm-hmm,
right? And then Mayor Rahm tried the same stunt here in Chicago. And he kept pressing it even after the courts had ruled against Quinn. I remember that. I remember all the reporters saying to Rahm, why are you continuing this lawsuit? Quinn just lost. I remember Rahm saying, we have a better plan than Quinn. Well, he lost. So every time you try something like this, you lose more time. Listen, I'm not saying this stuff is easy. It's really difficult. Obligations and deals were made that we weren't funding. And it was baked into the state constitution. I don't know what else to say other than you got to pay up.
Well, looking at other sources of revenue, what do you think of, given that you're against cutting pensions to retirees, Illinois is, according to Kiplinger magazine, is one of only 9 states that don't tax public pensions. How about taxing high-income retirees? How do you feel about that?
I have no problem with that.
Okay.
You know, I suppose that there are all sorts of actuarial tricks that really smart accountants can come up with for extending our obligations in such a way to have the least impact on current taxpayers, spread it out more. But I don't see us even trying to do that. I see the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago locked into these bizarre political games that don't seem to have any logical or rational end results.
It's not strategic in terms of growing revenue.
Yeah, unless the strategy is to bankrupt Chicago. If that's the strategy, then it's very
just
strategic.
Just run the clock down.
Yeah. Again, I said the only logical conclusion I could reach looking at the contradictions that Rauner embodies in his school funding proposals is that he wants the system to go bankrupt. Mayor Rahm's a different animal. He is motivated by a desire to promote his brand as Rahm, capital R, which is this miracle worker who can say no to the Democratic base. In the column, I had to concede that of the three, Trump, Rauner, Rahm, Rahm was the most logical, the most grown up, the only adult in the room, I think I wrote.
We're continually faced with the lesser of evil.
Yeah, we've really hit bottom with the lesser of evil
thing. Let's talk about Mayor Emanuel. In your column, you objected to the mayor's recent announcement of reviving the O'Hare Express train, which is
a joke.
A plan that originated during the Mayor Richard M. Daley administration to create a train that would go from downtown to O'Hare and not take as long as the Blue Line currently does and charge a premium to those well-heeled travelers who apparently can do this in other cities like London, et cetera.
Yeah.
And the mayor announced this objective at an invitation-only speech on infrastructure that he hosted on February 9th, 2017. Then a week later, here's a curious thing to me, a week later, the mayor announced that he'd spent part of his recent visit to Washington, D.C., visiting Trump administration officials, pitching a project to rehab the south leg of the Green Line. So I was like, wait, what? Where did this come from? Any clues about this?
No, I don't know.
And we have other projects in the works.
Yeah.
Like we have the red-purple modernization, which the Emanuel administration got last-minute Obama administration funding of. But then we still have this whole extension of the red line to 130th Street that is not funded.
I don't think, Dave, you or I will ever see it funded. It's only been talked about since 1969, the extension.
So why throw this Green Line thing into the mix?
Who knows? Who knows what was said to who in the back rooms, where, how that got pushed there? The way the CTA disperses its money is very bizarre, and obviously an emphasis on the north side than on the south side. But going back to the express train, which is just a colossal waste of time and energy and effort and money, that to me is just another example of how out of whack our priorities are in so many ways. That service will not significantly benefit any Chicagoan. If you put all the needs that Chicago has, just everything, starting with the violence, going on to the pending bankruptcy of the public schools, then you're dealing with just maintaining the infrastructure of trains that we already have, just basic upkeep, potholes, go on and on, mental health clinics, which we've closed. I probably could list, 100 things before I got to building an express train for out-of-town business people to cut 20 minutes. Let's think about what's available to out-of-town business person who flies in. You could take the Blue Line, go directly into the loop, takes about 45 minutes. You could read your newspaper, so Skype away or whatever if you want to do.
You could read Kiplinger.
Yes, you could read Kiplinger. You could take a cab. Now you take Lyft. You could take Uber. You could ride your bicycle, okay?
Which I've done.
We have done together.
That's right.
All right?
I don't see the rich folks doing that, though.
Yeah, I don't see them doing it either.
Well, Ken Griffin, maybe.
Yeah, Ken Griffin. $10,000 bike.
It's the $100,000.
Oh, was it $100,000?
Well,
the repair was $10,000. Yeah. My bad. I remember that last. You can have a friend pick you up. I mean, there's no shortage of ways to get from O'Hare downtown.
Time is money, 45 minutes minimum,
okay.
And if you're in a traffic jam on the Kennedy, it's going to take you an hour, hour and a half, maybe.
Oh, poor baby. it's just like, that's not my problem. Again, we must prioritize. Cutting from 45 to 22 minutes in a ride is not my problem.
It's looking like it's going to be all of our problems.
Here's the biggest joke of all, Dave. The assertion that it will not cost any public dollars. I would any Chicagoan believe that? It was like a nightmare to watch Mayor Rahm dust off that terrible idea that Mayor Daley, I haven't even tabulated how much public dollars we've wasted on it. Let's not forget that to make Mayor Daley's dream of an express train come true.
200 million.
Yes, 200 plus million was spent literally digging a hole in the ground for an underground station. And now apparently they're not going to use that underground station.
Out of the question.
It's out of the question. So at the very least, I think the city of Chicago has to be compensated. That $250 million has to be repaid by whoever gets the contract to run this thing. They make it clear it's going to be privately run. So it'd be like the parking meters, or more to the point, the tollways.
The Skyway is probably the most relevant example.
I should have said the Skyway. So before we pedaled the tollway, we spent a big chunk of change to repave and fix them up, which fattened the goose before it was sold. So whoever gets the rights to operate this express train should pay back the money that we squandered building the station that apparently they're not going to use.
I think they should just open that sucker. Make it a red line stop.
Yeah, make it a red line stop. You could have used that money to fix the green line. You know what I'm saying? That's why I'm saying it can be disheartening to watch the Democrats who are in charge do such a terrible job of managing the money that we have. And then we think that Republicans want to cut off the money, more money. So it's like, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Ben, that's all we've got time for. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, if you have any idea of why the mayor is pitching the green light and want to tell us about it, you can email us via contact@chigov.com or tweet us @chigovt. Did you know you could subscribe to this podcast and get automatic downloads of each episode? Search on your favorite podcast player for Inside Chicago Government. I'm Dave Gloetz. Thanks for listening.